Hello,
hello,
everyone. However you identify, you are welcome on our journey of broadcasting excellence.
Where we chat a lot of bollocks for a couple of lads that don't have any.
Too true. Although it does take balls to tell a lot of the stories on here to the public.
It sure does, mate. Each week we discuss a topic tenuously linked to being trans, from coming out to dildos and dildon'ts to special guests.
I am Satch.
And I'm Leo, and this is our transmission.
Our series sponsors are The Agora, where life begins.
The Agora is a fertility treatment centre that helps all kinds of parents-to-be. It has the highest success rates in London and the South East.
They are partnering with brands like ours to develop their specialism of trans fertility treatment.
With over 2,000 babies born through this fabulous fertility facility.
Fabulous fertility facility.
It has an excellent team and exceptional care for both you and your baby-to-be.
So, without further ado, let's find out what we are on about this week.
Hello!
Hello!
Hello! Dr. L in the house. Dr. L is back with us and has come back for round two. You must be a glutton for punishment, L. How are you doing?
I absolutely am. I enjoy being punished quite often.
how long was that before innuendo on this episode?
I literally have sex in my job title. What do you expect?
This is true. Well, you are, I have to tell you, this is a great honor for you because you are the first ever return guest.
Ooh.
You're gonna give me a regular slot?
Yes. I think you have to come back every series without fail. It's
absolutely
like, yeah.
Do you reckon we'll start talking about COVID in 5 seasons' time?
I really hope
so. Hopefully. But that does lead us nicely into what this episode is about, which we discussed on the first episode you did with us. You said you'd come back and do a COVID special, and you are. You are. You're a person of your word. You're a fan favourite, and you are back. Okay, so I am going to read the intro that Leo has written that I have not read before. So you are not alone in this, Elle. You are not the only one that's going to be surprised by the level of bullshit that Leo can create.
Also, I made this quite a while ago, so I can't remember what I've written. So it's going to be...
Oh, so we're all in this together.
Yeah.
High School Musical, guys. We're all in this together.
Yeah.
Right.
Is it the same one from last time or is it a new one?
Elle, please.
It's a new one. It's a new one.
Come on.
Please, we're professionals.
I think Elle should have her own theme tune. We should do a
Dr. L
imparting wisdom on the health. Yeah?
Yeah, beautiful. Nailed it. Whoa. All right.
The gap between me saying it and you reacting tells me that I didn't nail it.
This is the internet, mate.
It's shit internet, yeah.
Thanks, guys. Yeah, thanks. Thanks for the bullshit. Cheers. Okay, right, let's go for this intro then. Okay. Just as we've unleashed a second season of Satch and Leo's transmission, we are amidst a second wave of the dreaded coronavirus. But there is no link. COVID-19, you're going to get some like religious nutters now, Leo, going, why do you think God is punishing the world? Yeah. COVID-19 has changed life as we know it and made 2020 go from the year we were finally going to get our shit together to the year of the pangolin. Did I say that right?
It's the thing that was meant to have caused coronavirus, isn't it? Like,
wasn't it
like a pangolin crossed with a bat or something? I don't know.
Okay. A pangolin that had eaten a bat at some point. Yeah.
It used to be a pangolin that transitioned to a bat.
Okay. Don't judge it.
Sorry, Al. Sorry. Thanks for keeping us on the straight and narrow. Okay. But fear not about the dreaded pangolin. But back by popular demand, we have Dr. L. She's here to give us the lowdown on all things Rona. If you don't know Dr. L, she is one of the many NHS heroes we were clapping for all that time ago in the first lockdown. Yeah, what happened to the clap?
Yeah.
She took some antibiotics for it.
She is a junior doctor who works tirelessly within the A&E department and seriously knows her shit. So we've got 10 corona cues and she is going to medicate us with her sweet knowledge. How's that, Elle? How's that for an intro?
I feel like you've inflated me way too much.
Oh, not at all.
Also, like, look at me now compared to how I looked during the podcast 6 months ago when I was working in psychiatry. I feel like I've aged about 10 years.
Well, you don't look like you have, Elle. Okay, right. Are you sure you're ready for this then? Like we said, glutton for punishment, but we're about to go for 10 again. This is what makes you a hero. This right here.
I have no idea what's coming. I'm even more scared than, you know, walking into recess in A&E when there's been a major.
There's the trailer for this week's episode. All right, odds or evens, Sir Leo?
I always go odd, so I feel like I just got to stick to it now. I'm a creature of habit.
Okay then, mate. Question one.
I've written this in capital letters.
You know what we need here when we go question one? We need like the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire music. Like, yeah.
Let's set the scene.
Okay, yeah. Well, we'll spend all our millions of pounds that we earn from this on that.
Cool. And on a vaccine. Oh, well, there are.
Oh, yeah. Well, first we'll get the sound effects, then we'll get the vaccine.
Yeah.
Priorities, I think. Yeah.
Question one, when will this all end, in capital letters?
Just starting you off with a nice easy one, Elle.
Nice easy one. Well, we're all going to die. That's a pretty good start. You know?
Trigger warning on this episode. That's
we're all going to put you into an existential crisis. We will all die at some point. Oh,
we're permanently in existential crisis. Yeah. Don't worry.
Isn't it part of being a millennial? You know.
Yeah. It's on my CV.
It comes with the territory. Yes. So who knows, really? We hope that it's going to end with the advent of this, you know, vaccine. We've got multiple different kinds of vaccine currently bubbling around. My personal favorite is the Russian one that's called Sputnik. Everything great in Russia is clearly called Sputnik, you know.
Really?
But like one of the first rockety things was called Sputnik as well. Yeah. So yeah.
not a doctor of space then, Elle. The first rockety thing was called
you laugh. I was at Electron Monday night about how to do CPR in space.
As if you couldn't get any cooler.
No way.
Wow. She's going to lectures on CPR in space. Wow. Yeah.
Incredible.
Leo would go to space just to get some CPR action from someone.
Yeah.
on one of those rockety things. Okay, so serious answer is your favorite vaccine is the Russian one. That's what's giving us hope.
No, it's not. I just like the name of the Russian
one. Oh,
right. No.
The name, not the science. There is no hope.
Name. I don't know what about the science. I gave all that up years ago. Best thing about A&E is like working, not working, yes, no, need to come in, go home. That's what I love about it. But yeah, so there are multiple different vaccines currently being developed all around the world. We know that in this country, there's obviously the Oxford vaccine that seems to be the one that we've paid lots of money for. There's been some mixed reviews about it. Obviously, the first piece of data that came out said that it was 70% effective. And then the next one said, oh, no, it's 95% effective. And then there was something else released saying that actually maybe they've misdosed it. The thing is that vaccines often have years and years and years of development in them. And we're trying to rush this through in 6 months in a virus that is changing. You know, the infection that we saw in China at the beginning of the year is different to the infection that we're seeing now.
I'm just watching Leo's face. Leo's just slowly falling into a huge panic attack. This is good, Leo. This is translating the politician speak here. This is
That is true. At least I can kind of understand what's going on.
Sort your face out and let Elle continue.
Yeah, sorry.
Come on, Elle.
Yeah, especially if your face keeps coming up big on the screen, Leo.
Sorry, I'm gonna go back.
I mean, I did start it with "We're all gonna die." I mean,
that's true.
Whilst that is true. but there is hope. You know, the Pfizer vaccine has got a 95% effectiveness. It is our best chance that things are going to go back to normal. Now, I think there's a big feel and sort of on the front line what the new normal is going to look like. Are we going to be wearing face masks for the foreseeable? You know, maybe that is going to be part of the new normal.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's an adaptation that a lot of people would be willing to make if you could then actually see and socialize people that you care about.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think hopefully in the next 6 months, we'll have a new normality that's closer to the old normality.
That's
a good answer.
Yeah, that is good.
Okay, and that's probably the only bit we understood. It's like statistics and all the science. It's like, In 6 months, new normality, close to old normality. Okay, thanks. Cheers.
Yeah, good. Definitely okay. Didn't bullshit any of it.
Yeah, that's what we need.
Okay, question two. Okay, question two, brackets, 3-in-1 question, lol, is what it says.
You guys always do this to me.
Sorry.
What do you think of the new vaccine? Well, I feel like we kind of just answered that, but what do you think of the new vaccine? Could it fall through? Should people be worried about how quick it has taken to make it?
I mean, we've kind of covered that a little bit in the first question. What do I think of the new vaccine? We have flu vaccines every year. You know, we're not going to put something out there unless we are as certain as we can be under the current situation that it is safe for us to have.
Yeah.
I think the one thing that makes me feel uncomfortable is that we don't know how long antibodies last for, so how long this vaccine is actually going to protect you from the virus. There's not been very good data on that yet, but this virus is so new, we don't know that yet. And there's sort of mixed stories. Some people will say, oh yeah, there's been evidence of a second infection and someone else will come back and rebuff that. Mm-hmm. So there's so much information, but so much contraindicatory information at the same time.
Ooh, and we've word. big word alert.
Yeah, one I can't say. So it's really difficult. I think we have to trust in it, because if we don't, what's going to happen? Is there an irrational bit at the back of my brain, you know, as Ellie, not as Dr. V, that thinks, oh my god, it's going to be just like the zombie movie with Will Smith, where they all get vaccinated and they all turn into
Legend. Yeah,
I Am Legend. Yeah, there's a bit of in the back of my head that's like, oh my god, it's going to be like I Am Legend. But that's me, not sensible scientific me. So I keep going, no, that's just human hysteria and paranoia. That is not going to happen.
We must not catastrophize into Will Smith films, is what you're saying.
Thou shall not.
We think we're bad boys. That'll be our Will Smith film.
Or Fresh Prince.
Or Men in Black. Fresh Prince of Leeds. Is that you? Okay, cool. Right, question three.
Okay, so I think that you touched on this as well in the first question, but the question is, do you think life will ever return to normal, or will remnants of COVID life remain after COVID is vanquished? Like, for example, masks, and then even like handshaking and stuff like that.
It's really weird, because as a super tactile person, I'm now like frightened to touch people because it is so taboo now. It actually made me really quite anxious for a while, you know, not knowing how to interact around other people and stuff. I now feel like I am settling into a new normal, as you say. But I think there will be remnants about it for a long time. I think mask wearing will persist for a long time. It's interesting though, because the hand washing means that we've seen a huge reduction in cases of things like norovirus, you know, the winter diarrhea and vomiting bug, and other transmissible diseases. Don't know how it's correlating to STIs actually, but other things.
Interesting. Well, surely STIs would have gone down because of lockdown. People haven't been able to have as much sex with as many different people.
I bet people still
break. Leo's like, well, you might not know, but I have.
Unless if like this is the only thing, this is my only partner. If you can.
for the listeners out there, he's very strangely holding up a Rudolph teddy.
It's the only contact I have.
Weird bastard. Okay.
I'm not sexually attracted to reindeers, I swear.
Oh, sorry, there's the trailer for this episode. Oh god. Right, okay, we've digressed. So in answer to that question, hand washing's helped things go down, so hopefully that's something good that people can carry. Maybe it's not about going back, maybe it's about going forward. It's not even question seven yet.
That is a lovely way to put it.
I've already said something poignant and we're only on question
three. So profound. So profound.
Okay.
But it is like, it's hard to know what to do. Like, I was just thinking the other day, I went to the shop and I saw my great auntie who's like 80, and she was like carrying quite like a couple of bags. And I just went, oh, let me, like, do you want me to take this to a car, or, you know, can I help? And And she's like, no, love, don't worry. And we were like quite far like from each other. And I thought, that, like, I just don't know how to navigate situations like that anymore. I feel like because of COVID, anxiety and mental health and stuff is just completely like...
It's exploded. And I can't remember when was the last time we spoke? May time, I suppose. Was it around May? Yeah,
something like that.
Yeah, May, June time. I mean, in July, when I was still doing the liaison job, so, you know, anybody who came in mentally unwell into A&E, well, I was the doctor who went and saw them, we were seeing a real epidemic of mental health issues, anxiety, depression, suicidality, even things like manic episodes from people being trapped in their own boxes for such a long time. And a lot of people can run at like a hypermanic level, which is, you know, the person that's like, yeah, I'm up at 6 o'clock in the morning and I work until 10 o'clock at night and I train for marathons and I go out for dinner and blah, millions of things, you know, a lot of young professionals in London. You've got nowhere to put that energy in a pandemic. So you end up being caught up.
Yeah.
And actually, we were seeing people having full-blown manic episodes probably as the fallout of that. So there's been a huge mental health crisis because of COVID that we haven't been able to acknowledge, which has then been even more impacted upon the fact that a lot of our community mental health services have just almost shut down. They went to Zoom and doing things online, which a lot of people struggle to engage with because they're like, oh, what's the point in talking over a screen? It's not the same. And trying to get new referrals in, it was quite challenging and things at time. But again, that sort of balanced itself out is my understanding, that as the mental health services have got to know what works and what doesn't work for people, they've actually developed a new system. And actually that also seems to be improving now. And people are getting much better access than they were before. But it's been a really challenging time in all sorts of ways. And yeah, that sort of, oh, can I help somebody carry their bags and things like that? I think if you've washed your hands before you pick up the bags and then wash them again afterwards, and the contact, you have to be in contact with somebody for at least 15 minutes, they think, for virus transmission. So if you were just helping somebody carry something across, and there are loopholes even during, not loopholes, that's the wrong word for it, but there are guidelines within even this lockdown that aiding somebody isn't seen as breaking the law, you know. So it's
right.
Supporting a vulnerable person is allowed within the remits of the current guidelines. So, you know, yeah, maybe don't, you know, give her a cuddle because they've already advised against don't cuddle your grandparents at Christmas. That makes sense, but you could carry her bags and her not be at risk.
Leo, you know? Maybe this is a situation where we're at an advantage being trans, because we've struggled to navigate social situations our whole life and have also been trapped in our whole lives. So, wow. You know what I mean?
Maybe the experts. I should be interviewing you.
That's next series. Because you were in the first lockdown, you were working on the mental health ward, weren't you, or something like that?
I was working in two different jobs at the time. I was the doctor in A&E, seeing all the mental health cases that came in, and I did that a couple of days a week. And then a couple of days a week, I worked on an older adult psychiatry ward, so mainly dementia patients who were too significantly unwell to be either at home or in a care home. They needed medical care. And it was the COVID positive dementia ward for East London, which was, I mean, most of the time they were just coughing over each other and it was okay. But
Was that okay? Because they all had it anyway.
They all had it. That's the thing. It was all people that already had it were all then put together in this one ward. So if anybody swabbed positive for COVID, they were put straight onto that ward. So
did you get it?
I had it back in the beginning of March. So I got a really awful headache. Like, so this is what upsets me when people go, oh, well, I don't think it could be COVID. Actually, a lot of things could be COVID. And my experience of COVID was, it was like the third week of March and I had this awful headache, and I get migraines, but it was like worse than any migraine I'd ever had. And it was all sort of really tight all over my head. And I'd been away on a course, and I went and saw my mum, and my mum picked me up from where I was. And it was about an hour and a half's drive back to my parents' house from where she picked me up. And I cried the whole journey back. And I realized I was being really paranoid and really over emotional, which as she said, didn't seem like anything out of the ordinary. But I knew I was being more paranoid and emotional than usual.
It's like doctors are the worst patients. Sort of
yeah, literally, yeah. Literally. And I was like, I just don't feel very safe at the moment. I don't feel like I can trust anybody. I don't really know what's going on. You know, really strange language. Again, you know, somebody comes into A&E saying that, you're like, yeah, yeah, section under the Mental Health Act. So I was like, and I just couldn't recognize it at the time. And then I had a week and a half's annual leave because I was supposed to go to Israel for a week and a half. That got cancelled. So I just went to my parents' house. And that was like the first symptom. And then I got really, really snotty. So I thought the headache was because all my sinuses were blocked.
Yeah.
And I literally everything was blocked and painful and I couldn't smell a thing. And I thought that was because everything was bunged up. And it wasn't until it, and I was so tired. And I'd been tired for a few days before that headache, like more so than I thought I should have been. And I was like, oh, I'm just emotionally exhausted. Like I'm getting ready to change jobs. It's all, you know, I kept rationalizing it all the time. But then it was like, I feel really tired. I shouldn't feel this tired. But it was about, so I noticed the tiredness on the Monday, the headache on the Wednesday, the snottiness on the Thursday. And it wasn't until the following Saturday when the headache and the snottiness had gone down. And I realized my sister gave me a bottle of hand cream and went, this smells amazing. Smell this. And I went, can't smell anything. And it was like, shit. Oh, my God. Yeah. And in the meantime, I had gone all the way from Yorkshire where my parents were. So this was the week before lockdown. Drove from Yorkshire to West Sussex to go and pick my nan up, who had just been diagnosed.
West Sussex!
Just travelling all over the place. So it's probably my COVID everywhere that I didn't know I had, to go and pick up my nan, who'd just been diagnosed with dementia, to move her into a house up in Yorkshire near my parents. And she had no immune system because of one of the medications she was on. And so I sat in a car with her for 7 hours.
Did she get it?
No, she still didn't die. I think she's part cockroach, really, that lady. It's quite remarkable. You know, she's like 83 and literally has no immune system. Didn't even get so much as a sniffle. And it's like,
oh my God. And yeah. To survive that trip as well. Leo knows the Sussex to Yorkshire trip
Too well. Very, very hungover.
Even but, I've made that trip once as well. God, nearly killed me. Right. Okay. Question... Question four. Okay. This is cheery. Do you think we will see another pandemic in our lifetime?
I hope not. I mean, did you see there was a meme that went round at the beginning of the year that it was like in 1820 there was a big pandemic, I can't remember what it was. And then in 1920 it was Spanish flu, and they were like, oh, what are we due for 2020? Must be another pandemic. And it was like, oh, that brought it on, didn't it? I regret saying this.
That's so crazy. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I know.
So unless we live to 2120,
yeah,
we're good.
I hope we're good. There is antibiotic resistant gonorrhea. So that is a pandemic around Leeds, actually.
Yeah.
So.
And you know why? Because Leo and his reindeer have been out. That's why.
We've been down a few too many chimneys.
Okay, mate. Right. Okay. Well, yeah. Hopefully not, then.
Hopefully not.
Because can you imagine if there was another one? That'd just be such a nightmare to like.
It'd be shit, wouldn't it?
Little ray of sunshine as ever. This is the sort of calls I get in the morning now. It just ring me up and be like, mate, what if there's another one? And I'm just like, can we deal with one at a time, please?
Let's just get through today
and let me spin you some positive bullshit about having experience at being trapped inside and stuff like that. And that's how we'll get Leo through today. Okay, question five then, Leo.
Question five. Do you think that COVID severely impacting BAME groups is due to socioeconomic factors, genetic factors, or both?
Ooh, now that's a good question.
Ooh, I think it's probably both. I think the way that it has affected, especially my BAME colleagues, most of the people in the NHS who have died have been BAME. You know, to the extent that with the second lockdown and the second wave, they were like, we should consider not having any BAME workers at work for their own safety. And it's like, that would literally leave us with like 30 to 40% of our workforce. Like,
oh God.
You can't like, and then there was other, this was the worst thing, is that certain places have said, if you go to work, if you were to die in service as a BAME, you know, member of the BAME population, we wouldn't give you your life insurance as an NHS worker wouldn't be covered. Like, what? I've heard that like thrown around. I don't know how true that is. It could just be speculation, but that's something that I've heard, that Trust would be like, oh, we wouldn't necessarily be able to cash in on your life insurance, which is like, there's a big stipend that goes to your family if you die in service, because of obviously your loss of earning potential. And they're saying, you know, technically you've could have potentially gone to work against medical advice because you're so vulnerable being from a BAME background. So I think there must be a genetic component to it that we just don't understand.
If that is, if it is a genetic component, if that is part of the reason anyway, because I think we all know that, it, you know, like socioeconomically and because of the institutional racism, basically, that is a huge contributing factor. But if there is a genetic component, is that something to do with where it started in Asia, and then that's kind of, does that have anything to do with it or no?
I don't think so, because I think the virus has changed so much as it's spread across the world. I don't think so. Obviously, I'm not an expert in virology.
Neither.
No.
You'll be shocked by this, Elle, but neither am I.
No, really. So obviously, I'm just talking from my own opinion here. I don't think so, but I obviously don't know. And I don't know if that's been looked into either. But yeah, and obviously, as we know, people coming from a lower socioeconomic background will always have worse health outcomes. We see it here in Portsmouth all the time, that people present really late. They just don't, you know, they don't trust in doctors. They don't, you know, or they...
Yeah, another one I heard today that was, I was watching the, what's his name, Matt Hancock, making the announcement in the House of Commons about the new tier system, Christmas and blah, 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 blah. And the guy that questioned him from the Labour Party said, there are people from that don't earn a lot of money that won't go and get tested, especially in the cities where it's really high. They won't go and get tested because if they get tested, especially if they're self-employed, then they can't go to work and they can't feed their family. So until the government... make sure that there is a pot of money for those sort of people to guarantee that if you get tested and you can't work for 2 weeks or whatever else, that you can get the same amount in benefits instead, so you can feed your families. Then not enough people are going to take the tests. It's going to go on forever. So
exactly, and it's, you know, the benefits is, you know, if you get applied to be on benefits, the turnaround is so slow, you know, it will take 2-3 weeks, if not longer, to get your first payment sometimes. And, it, you know, difficulty accessing those systems, you know, so yeah, you know, and if there is just, you know, there's an association, lower socioeconomic status, you've got more people living in a smaller space. So diseases will spread quicker, you know. Yeah. Poorer quality nutrition because you can't afford, you know, or, you know, you hear all those cases that, you know, you'll put more money towards feeding your kids than you will yourself, you know.
Yeah. I'm actively trying to keep my rants about Tories and transphobes and all of the things that have a tendency to wind me up. I'm actively trying to stay calm on this podcast more these days. It's a new series, new me. But while we're on the subject, that wanker today, was it, do you remember when they got elected and there was all that bullshit about manifesto promises of we get 50,000 new nurses, and it made no sense at all. Do you remember that vibe? That video went round about Nikki, whatever her name was, on with Piers Morgan and all that, and they were going, but this makes no sense. You're saying we're going to get 50,000 nurses, but we're not. But because of the pandemic, which they did not know about at the time, and because people volunteered to become extra nurses to help in this situation, the Tory party are now claiming that as a win
and as
them sticking by their promise. Honestly, my TV nearly went out the window at that point. I was raging.
But that's the thing, we put so many... You know, it was the bravery of so many people that were like willing to come back. People came back from having given up their registrations back into nursing.
Yeah.
We had so many student nurses step up, you know, that way before their time. You know, I have one of my very best friends was in her final year of med school. You know, she finished her exams in March and a week later she's working as a doctor, you know.
Whoa.
Then that's insane.
And they're still charging nurses. Is it like 120 quid or something for their nursing license, for the privilege?
Oh yeah. So we all pay for our, we have to pay for our registrations, you know. Now with COVID, we'll have to launder our own uniforms, you know, we get to give our own set of uniform, you know. So it's things like that that you're like, there you go, you deal with it. But actually, okay, so I work 5 days a week minimum. I've got 5 pairs of scrubs. I have to wash them at 90 degree heat. Some days I work 6 or 7 days in a row. So I have to wash 2 or 3 times a week on a 90 degree wash to kill whatever's on it, you know. And it's like, that's quite expensive. Like, it adds up, you know.
Also, depending on what you've been through as a doctor that day, there might be things like when you're washing those clothes that could be triggering.
Yeah, well, you can't.
You're trying to deal with.
You can't wash them with anything else. And I mean, when I was a labour ward doctor, one day I think I counted 7 different body fluids on me.
I didn't even know there was 7.
Yeah, you did, you lying, dirty bastard.
Rudolph knows.
Rudolph knows, yeah. Riddled Rudolph. Well, between the nursing and doctor licences that you have, the registrations, and between the 140 quid to legally change your gender, which I found out yesterday, there surely should be enough money to cover the people that need to self-isolate when they're self-employed and they can't afford to feed their families. Where's the money going, guys? Where?
So, I think it's a very interesting point that obviously... They very kindly said doctors and nurses are going to get a pay rise. Well, it's not a pay rise. They're just not freezing pay this year. But they're still freezing it for everybody else in the public sector. Well, aren't MPs public sector workers? And don't they vote every year to give themselves a pay rise? So are they going to have a pay freeze this year?
Right, we're moving on to the next question because I'm seriously about to kick off. Okay, right. Number six. What are your thoughts on the culling of all the mink in Denmark?
I'm really devastated.
Don't bring it up, Leo.
I saw it on the news. I was like, I better do some research about this coronavirus.
The Rona.
Because do you know what it is, El? We've got the whole team that do all the reads, but we can't trust them. So Leo is, you know, he has to
check everything.
Review their work. Yeah.
I saw on the news about this mink stuff, and I was like, they're killing, well, culling. I don't know.
How many did they kill?
Because millions
kill,
of them.
Kill. Yeah.
I hope they at least made some nice coats or something.
Oh my God. That's our vegan listenership. Plummeting
themselves. But if they're culling them anyway, it's more vegan to stop them from going to waste rather than just cull and kill.
That's like PhD level argument. See, that's why we get you on for a second series. Okay. Yeah, I bet the vegans are going mad, aren't they, about that?
So I eat mostly plant-based, and it's like, yeah, I find it really devastating because it's like, hang on, like, what? How are minks that barely interact with humans, as far as I'm aware, like, you know, it's like, okay, so we found it in a tiger. Are we going to go and kill off the rest of the tigers, or are you just using it as a good excuse to cull off something that you view as a pest?
Whoa.
Why did they have the minks anyway? What do minks do?
Like a big industry in...
But is it for the fur? How much do you know about Danish minking?
I'd say, yeah.
That's true. I don't know. I swear there's something about it. It's like they have like a purpose.
I figured that it must be for clothing because that's what you normally have a mink farm for.
Yeah, maybe it must be that. But it's just a bit crazy, isn't it, that like us as humans we have that say in a way to destroy some.
What if the Mix decided they were going to cull us?
Well, maybe that's what they'll claim they were going to do, and that's we just got there first. That's what the Danish mink industry, the dinkestry, that's what we'll call it. Go get your PhD in that, Leo. Doctor of the dinkestry. Oh my god. Well, it's not a sentence I ever thought I'd say today, you know. Okay, question seven, Leo.
Question seven. Okay, so does COVID-19 have the potential to mutate and become even more deadly?
Oh god, another uplifting.
can you deal with the answer, Leo?
Oh,
you all right?
I think, yeah, Rudolph will just have to hold me.
Cover your ears, Rudolph. Adults are talking. Go on now.
All viruses mutate. They mutate to survive. And they can go one of two ways. They can obviously mutate in a way that they become more aggressive, so they kill people off quicker, or they kill more people off. Or actually, more commonly, we see viruses mutate in a way that they become less deadly, and that's because you can then be carried for longer without people realizing and trying to kill you off, so therefore you can survive for longer. I think the biggest issue that we'll have with COVID and mutation is that if we develop a vaccine or a cure or whatever it is we come up with, if the virus then mutates ever so slightly, it's then not going to match it well enough, and I think that's going to be a bigger issue potentially, and that's what would make it deadly as such, that it's actually the way it harms you is no different, but the treatment that we have is no longer effective because it's mutated away from that. We see it most commonly, for example, in HIV. People who've been on antiretroviral treatment for HIV for many years, especially if you're not taking it consistently, the virus starts to pick up on that thing's attacking me, but it's not attacking me in a consistent way. So then a day that you miss your antiretroviral therapy, your viral load can creep up a bit, and then you take some more so it goes back down. But in that time, it's had the opportunity to mutate into something slightly different. So actually, every time you go back on it, it's less effective each time. And that's why people can still get quite sick even after being on therapy for HIV. And it's why it's so important with antivirals to take them strictly, like every day at set times.
Tenacious little fuckers, these viruses, aren't they? Nice. Sophisticated, if you will. How the F, we've done space, we've done science, now I'm going to do a history question. How did our great-great-great-grandparents survive the Spanish flu and the Black Death and the plague and all of these things? They didn't have all the technology and whatever we have now, so how did that dissipate?
So depends what it is. The Black Death was a change in season. So the carriers all died off. And it was the same as sort of the Great Plague in London in the 1600s. There was the fire, which killed off most of the carriers. And I'm talking about the animal carriers, the fleas and the rats and those kinds of things. That's what kind of got rid of it. And the mink. With Spanish flu, again, something that I'm not particularly well read up on, but my understanding is that we gained immunity to it, and it killed off a whole generation of people. And then the people that were left had either survived an infection or had a natural immunity towards it. So it would have been the herd immunity. The thing that Bojo was going on about right at the very beginning, that if we allow lots of people to get infected by it, then actually they would be able to, you know, survive in the long term. As a whole population. But you then have to accept that a large proportion of the population is going to die, which in 2020 we don't feel is acceptable with the knowledge that we have.
Totally. So we even need a whopping great fire to kill, which sounds like a really extreme version of rock, paper, scissors. It's like fire beats plague.
I mean, we could start it in Parliament potentially, but you know.
Yeah. Or herd immunity to say adios to the Spanish flu, or we need these vaccines to work, basically.
Yeah, basically. There's other interesting stuff that they're doing at the moment as well. So like at work today, I got given a huge box of COVID tests, and I now have to COVID test myself twice a week, which we haven't had the whole way through the pandemic, okay, or at least in the places that I've worked. So I'm now going to start COVID testing twice a week to see if that's going to reduce transmission.
Whoa.
Because if I'm then positive, I then have to self-isolate for 2 weeks because, and then I shouldn't spread it off. Because the thing is that you've got to imagine I have so much human contact every day. Yeah. You know, in a 10-hour shift, I see at least 10 patients, plus all the other nurses and doctors and porters and everybody else, you know. So that's, I've got contact with probably 30 to 40 other humans every day. And I touch a lot of other humans because you have to examine them. And even though I'm in PPE now, for every patient that I see, we're still seeing virus spread, you know.
Is there sufficient PPE now?
I've never had an issue, to be honest, but I think it's interesting because of the masks that they make us wear to like see day-to-day patients is just like the basic square surgical masks, mm-hmm. which I think are fine. But obviously the ones that are better, we reserve just for situations that what we call it like aerosol generating. So if we're going to put somebody on a ventilator or we do CPR or something like that, then we wear the much better masks. So we're obviously protecting our much better PPE. But
see, because on a Friday, I go and teach songwriting and performance to like 100 students. And that worries me enough as it is, getting the train and all these students coming in that have come in on trains and buses and whatever else. And we're all wearing masks the whole time and stuff. But that scares me enough. So for, you know, for you and for people doing what you it must be. I guess you just can't afford to think about it. You've got to crack on.
Yeah, I think.
Do you get mental health support as well? No. Tory government again.
I'm sure there is more support out there than I am aware of. And I was very spoiled when I worked in mental health. When you are a psych doctor, you, like a psych trainee, you have a weekly protected 30 to 60 minutes with a consultant psychiatrist that is your time to do what you want with. And, you know, most of the time it's about clinical supervision, which is, you know, I saw this case and I didn't really know what to do and blah, blah, blah. I think poor Angela just became my personal therapist for 8 months. So, like, yeah, I owe that woman a lot. But, you know, and it was really weird going from that, where I was so supported, into ED, where it's like, okay, right, fine. You know, I had a shift the other day and I came home and I was telling my friend about it. He was like, do you need some therapy? And I was like, no, it was just shit that you do. You know, we had a very young woman come in that died. You know, she was younger than me, unexpected. And then having to getting another person ventilated that I didn't, you know, putting into a medically induced coma, who I was like, I don't know if you're going to wake up. And I was like, I just need to have a cry and then I'll be fine. And I think it is, when you sign up to be a healthcare professional, you know that this is part of what you've signed up for. So it's, I'm not frightened by COVID or going, it was like, you know, at the beginning, it was like, okay, so this might kill me, but something's going to. And I would still rather be here doing this than anything else. So here we go, let's crack on.
Yeah, don't peg it, Elle, because we need you back for series 3. You're committed.
I'll try my best. I've already had it, I'll be all right.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Although, you know, this is called Satch and Leo's transmission, so it may get transmitted on here. Actually, we might need to seriously consider a rebrand. Yeah. Oh, dear. Okay. Question eight. Yeah. Why do you think some people who have contracted COVID-19 are completely asymptomatic and some people become seriously unwell?
If I could answer that, I think I'd have a lot of money. We actually don't know why. But it's like 80% of people are asymptomatic, they believe. Which is just really? Like crazy.
So yeah. We might have had it already and not even known. But...
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I think they think it's a lot of our generation that probably have, you know. So, you know, when I had it, my mum also lost her sense of smell, but my nan, who had no immune system, had no symptoms. My dad has had no symptoms, and one of my sisters had quite bad, like, coldy symptoms around the same time. She's 14. my other sister is 16. She's had no symptoms either. But they were, you know, we're all living in a house together, the six of us, when mum and I were both really like sick with it. So
can you get tested retrospectively? So like you can get a test and it says, oh yeah, you had it 6 months ago or something like that, or
you can't get that kind of testing. So there was a point in May, June time, I can't remember exactly when now, but they basically paid for all NHS staff to have antibody testing. So I had a blood test to see if I'd ever had the infection, and that obviously came back positive because that was when I was first unwell. It was in March before we were swabbing people. We didn't have a swab at that time.
Right.
So I just assumed that I probably had had it. I mean, I lost my sense of smell for 4-6 weeks, something like that. It's horrible. Yeah. It was like, oh, but it's never going to come back and I can't even taste coffee. It's really upsetting.
Oh, no.
It was so bad. But like, yeah. So there's, I think, you know, it's like 80% no symptoms at all, 15% quite mild symptoms like mine, and then 5% get really, really sick. And we obviously see the worst 5%.
Yeah.
But there is no rhyme or reason who becomes really sick and who doesn't. There's obviously people who are more vulnerable. People with diabetes seem to be more vulnerable. People from BAME populations seem to be more vulnerable to having bad infections. And I think it's younger people, Caucasian people seem to have immune systems that deal with it better. So we've got a few clues, but no clear answers at all, as far as I'm aware.
And you can get, I mean, you can be around, you could probably be in situations where it's more risky and you don't get it, and then you think you're all right, and then you, like Will, my bandmate's sister, she was working in a COVID testing center over the summer for ages, and she didn't get it, and then she went back to uni and got it within a week.
Exactly. But I think that's the issue, is that when you're in a high-risk situation, you play by the rules. You wear your PPE, you wash your hands, right. You know, you avoid human contact, and then you're in a low-risk situation, so you relax. And that's when people catch
it. They get you.
Stay vigilant.
Stay alert.
Hide behind a tree, it won't see. But, you know, we see it, in the sex working community with STIs. You are hyper-vigilant at work. You always wear a condom. You know, don't fucking come near me without one. And then you, in your private life, because you're trying to make a separation between your clients and your chosen partners, it'd be like, oh yeah, no, we don't need to use condoms, it's fine. And it'll be some fucker that, you know, you think you can trust has given you chlamydia, you know, which then fucks your work life as well. So, you see that loads when I was working in the sex workers union. So it's a similar thing. So it's that whole, as you say, when you relax because you think it's a low risk environment, is the time that you're most likely to catch it.
All right, Leo, you wear a condom with that Rudolph, okay? He's not, can't be trusted, filthy bastard. Right, okay. Question nine. Okay.
So, our mate Mitch had suspected COVID back in March. I'm pretty sure he had it because all the things like that you were saying when you had COVID, he had that, which is weird because I didn't. Have any symptoms really, and I live with him, so he had it back in March, and now he tastes garlic sometimes out of nowhere, and he's researched online and he's found other people who have had COVID that have this same weird like garlic taste sometimes like months after contracting it. So what do you make of that is the question.
I love how we're just turning these very professional interviews into, don't worry about it, Mitch, mate. I'll ask Dr. L on the just a free consultation. Don't worry about it.
Could be hallucination. I suppose people do talk about like phantom smells and stuff like that. If nerve endings have been damaged, there is a chance that the body can like just generate something out of nowhere. So I think that's probably it. It's sort of, it doesn't quite know what to do, so it's creating a sensation. I joked it's a hallucination, but it can be something like, you know, like when somebody has a limb amputated.
No, I've heard of that because I saw it on Grey's Anatomy, so I'm definitely well-versed in amputation, but because there's a bit where
the most legit.
Mitch has just been eating loads of garlic. Come on, he must just be.
No, he said, and he showed me this video of this girl, and she's like explaining it, and she's this American girl, and she's like, yeah, and it was like certain things that would trigger the sensation. So she's like, look at me, I just had this glass of Coke, and now I taste garlic, and he's like, I have the same thing.
look at me, Coke. Garlic. you can see that on a YouTube video. Like, what? You just open her mouth and there's a bulb of garlic there.
It's like, what is this? No, but I thought that is so strange. There's got to be. But what? So it's similar to Phantom Limb.
It's similar to fantasy, as in made up.
Where like the nerve endings are trying to create something out of the stimulation that they've got.
Now that Mitch has been diagnosed with bullshit, now we can go on to. Love you, Mitchy babes. Love you if you're listening. Chelsea going to win the league, yeah. And now on to question 10. Would you rather... Okay, if we needed theme music before for a tense question, here's the dreaded question 10, Elle. Are you ready? Would you rather...
Right, I'm ready, yeah.
Would you rather, A, you have to self-isolate for 2 weeks with your last two exes, B... Everyone's stockpiled and the only thing you can get your hands on is 2 weeks of pot noodles, only Bombay Bad Boy flavour. Or C, you find out that your Zoom meeting where you forgot to turn the camera off and dance naked to Britney Spears goes viral.
There's already loads of nudes of me on the internet, so it's probably the easiest option.
Easy option.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna lie. Yeah. I'm not gonna lie. I'm doing this Zoom meeting in my boxes, like, because I can.
Close enough.
It makes me feel powerful. Oh dear. Right. Well, thank you for coming on, Elle. We've massively taken up more of your time because we just love chatting to you. And you've got to stay safe and come back in series 3. You promise.
Yeah, stay alert.
I promise I will stay alert. And I will
stay alert. Don't go the same way as the minx.
Maybe the minx are coming for you.
and we have this new feature now called Person of the Week, right? Where we pick people that write in and give us reviews and stuff like that, and we make them Person of the Week, fans of the show. So I think this week. I want to pick my mother-in-law, Merlin Cooper, that listens every week and then has to have a lie down in a dark room after. but she works for the NHS. So in your honour, Elle, as an NHS worker, I think we'll pick her as Person of the Week, if that's all right with you.
That sounds wonderful.
And Animal of the Week is definitely the mink.
Not Rudolph.
Oh, Rudolph's made.
Yeah. Rudolph's getting a lot of action. Rudolph doesn't need to be Person of the Week. Rudolph. Oh, outro. Sorry, there's an outro. What is your prognosis on your second podcast experience?
It's a good thing that I'm into punishment, really.
And on that glorious note, right, we'll see you next time, Elle. Thank you.
See you later. Bye.
Over and out.